Welcome, everyone, to the completely unnecessary podcast for Tuesday, November 10th. It's cold out there, 2020. That's Mitchell's shirt-wearing Ian Ferguson. Mitchell's. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we have lots of sordid tales of retro and modern gaming goodness for you. Ooh, it's gossipy. No, it's not. What are we talking about?
I was gonna say, this looks fairly cut and dry.
Sega Cell and Arcade Biz, talking about a PS5 article from Kotaku, the Warrior 64 console Kickstarter, the GameStop TikTok challenge, and a little bit more. Ian, how was your weekend?
Busy. I worked. We had like 2 weeks that were kind of slower, which is usually common in the fall, especially in October. But they were busier than, you know, most falls. And then, I don't know, this weekend it ramped right back up. I think it's probably too early for people to be doing Christmas shopping, but who knows? I mean, right now video games are just riding an incredibly high wave of popularity because there's nothing else to do. And that's what I've been doing at home. I've been playing my PC Engine stuff. I got to stream for a little bit last night. I haven't streamed, well, I streamed music like 2 weeks ago, and then last night I streamed a little bit of Devil's Crush and a little bit of Rondo of Blood for Vulture Video, which is a small independent video rental store that my buddy Rick volunteers at. So they were doing some fundraising for that, and it seemed like it went pretty well. Eric Lappy was there. Rick was there. Matt Wissig was there, the guy who has the Contra world record. So yeah, it was a good time. That's pretty much what I did. Oh, and I've been reading a lot of Pokemon manga.
Oh yeah, I saw you tweet a couple of funny pictures.
It's like mashed potatoes for the brain. It's been very easy to read, very comforting.
Not too complex.
A bit more dramatic than the TV show, I would say, which is kind of interesting. It looks like they were written kind of side by side, so there's, you know, big differences. But yeah, no, it's been fun. So yeah, that's what I did. Vani's been catching up on her reading too.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I got to read more again. I stopped reading. Probably once I got smartphones. I used to read like 3-4 books a year, and I got to get a big heavy book off the shelf and actually read it.
Smartphones will definitely screw that up.
No, it's smartphones have made us idiots as people.
There's a lot of good things to them as well. I mean, no, but I've always had a problem with attention, and my phone has made that 100% worse.
Yeah, it's warped people's minds. I mean, if you try to communicate with someone that's 20 years younger, or it's like you're almost talking to an alien sometimes if they're constantly on their phone or on Instagram. Now it sounds like an old man, but it's true. And there's just, this is another conversation, but they're starting to figure out how engagement with your phone is changing like your neural network in your brain in terms of constant attention and going back and forth with things. And it's scary. We missed that. We're the last generation to deal. We got scot-free with that. We didn't get cell phones till we were like late teens, early 20s, so we were okay. But you grew up with them.
I didn't get my first cell phone until I think 2002, and I didn't get my first
2004 for me.
I didn't get my first smartphone. I was fairly early on that. I think my first smartphone was an iPhone 3.
I didn't get mine till like the 4, I think. So I was like 2013, 14.
Yeah, my first one was the one right before they did like the nicer display.
But I harken back to a simpler time, the 80s. And you know what, Ian? Wednesday night, I'll be on Twitch, twitch.tv/contrycode. Every Wednesday or usually Thursday night, we do 80s commercial blocks from 80s Commercial Vault on YouTube. It's a fun time. You ever stop in and watch some with Pat?
No, Wednesdays I'm almost always working. That's why.
Okay. Sometimes Thursday, but it's a nice cultural, you know, lesson, history lesson. I'm usually one of the oldest people in there, so I explain to people like the toy stuff that comes up, or You know, it's nice. It's I found my niche on Twitch. I don't like playing games on Twitch because, you know what, it's not relaxing and you can't interact with people as easily. But watching commercials and riffing on it, the local commercials are a blast. When you see some of the local commercials, like a local gun store commercial, he's like, where the guy's like, they're cheap because I can't give them away, but I want to. And it's like the funniest shit ever. It's like, this is great.
Playing games on Twitch is absolutely not relaxing at all.
I mean, I tried it, but it's like, if it's a hard game, then you definitely can't concentrate on like the chat and the game. It's impossible. With Unreal, it was like a chore to play that game and then try to even pretend the chat existed. You just can't do it. You just can't. But yeah, twitch.tv/countrycode there. So the election results we got on Saturday, at least they called it finally on like Saturday morning after like four grueling days of little sleep. I'm just happy that I'm like more relaxed now in the grand scheme of things. Obviously, we have to go through the process of, you know, the actual electors and the college and confirming in Congress to count, but it's going to be all right. I know there's some kerfuffle going on right now, but it's mostly blowhard stuff. But I bet the market, though. That was also why. So there's a legal, remember, gamble responsibly before you get into this. There's a legal gambling market called Predict-It. There's also, I think, a secondary one, and they have a federal exemption where you can bet on world events and politics, and I bet on different states in the election. And how it's legal, Ian, is that universities throughout the U.S. are connected to the system so they can see how people are thinking. And that's, and they use that for research. So that's how it's legal. That's how they got around this loophole.
But it's small money, too, isn't it?
Well, you can bet up to $850 per betting pool. So it's not exactly small, but like, you know, you can spread $850 out 20 different ways, and that's 16 grand. But so it's that, but they limit the size of the number of bettors in each pool as well, which I think is 5,000. So only 5,000 people can bet on straight up who's going to win the election. But then 5,000 people can bet on who's going to win this state, who's going to win Minnesota. So I found a few markets. I got in. I got great odds on Georgia. So I always thought Georgia was going to be either 50-50, or I always thought I felt good about Georgia for the Democrats. So I got like 3 or 4 to 1 odds. 4 to 1 odds, close to it. So this is what I'm going to say to people. If you're disappointed about the election, I understand that. But if you think things are going to change, I implore you to challenge me on Predict-It. Put your money where your mouth is. Go gamble against Pat directly on these markets. Go do it. If you hate me, if you think I'm a leftist, take that credit card out, and I'll be glad to bet against you. Prove Pat wrong here. I'm just trying to, you know, get better odds here. Some of these markets haven't closed yet. Prove Pat wrong. Put the money out there and bet against me. Because you're literally doing that on these markets. So you can do that. I'm trying to rile you up and maybe get a couple of your bucks at the same time. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. So other than that, this weekend, I saw Frank, and we just did a late birthday celebration. We watched the game of the week, and then we just ordered pizza. Ate the food. We got a Yoliva pizza, which is actually pretty good for San Diego pizza.
God, pizza sounds so good.
I hadn't had pizza in a few months, because every time I have pizza, I'm grossly disappointed in San Diego whenever I have pizza. I'm like, oh, I want pizza. This is not great pizza. Like, you can get to okay pizza, but you're not going to get to those Long Island Heights that we experienced last year. That's for damn sure. But speaking of that, you know, we might get a vaccine.
So. Yeah, 90%. 90%
effectiveness.
Effectiveness.
Over, I think, was it 100 people? Was it over 30,000 people they gave it to?
Yeah, I believe so. I can't get too excited or hopeful about much of anything these days.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We'll wait until that needle's in my vein. But, yeah, I mean, that's promising.
Well, the rollout's going to be complicated, obviously. What do you have to have the military come down to, you know, everyone's street and give it to people? I mean, how are you going to do that with 350 million people?
Just aerosol everything.
You get those Amazon drones, deliver them, you do it yourself.
Terrifying.
Ian, what about Sega selling off their arcade biz here?
Yeah, kind of sad. Sega sold off their arcade business. They were seeing a downturn in profits. A few months ago, they sold off one of their biggest arcades, the Building 2. I can't remember exactly where that was, but it was all over the news. It's got a real, real unique building shape. Go away. Stop telling me things. Thank
Sorry,
you.
Sorry, Ian.
So they said that it was strongly affected by COVID-19. That's why they sold it off. They transferred. They sold the shares to Genda. It's the soft J, I believe, a company that has a strong desire to expand amusement center operation businesses and has decided to conclude the share transfer agreement of a board directors meeting held today. So that's who they sold off the arcade business to. It's not the end of the line for Sega, though. They are still going to be making in arcades. They're still going to be making arcade games, but they are going to be transferring some of their arcade division over to console development, they said, which is good. Sega's got a lot of properties under it now, and you know, there's lots of fans that would love to see their older properties come to light again. It worked very, very well with Streets of Rage. So yeah, that's where it's happening. Businesses all over are feeling the effects of the pandemic.
From what I read from this little article here, from there was an interview with the PR chef of Sega Sammy Holdings. Did they buy out Sammy at some point? I guess they did.
No, Sammy bought them out at some point.
Oh, Sammy bought Sega?
That was a while ago.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Sammy bought Sega.
They're gonna keep. They're going to keep like the Sega arcade names up there and on the whatever. I know they have Sega restaurants, but it sounds like it's going to be, well, we're keeping like 15% of it, but they're not going to be controlling it anymore. So because if you like Sega arcades and that's the brand, I don't know why you change the brand on this stuff. So that makes sense. So it's not like these are disappearing entirely. They're just not going to be in control of it anymore. This question is: it is assumed that Sega's arcade game production team will still exist, but will this sale have any effect on the arcade development? It's as you recognize, our group will still continue doing the amusement device development business. Moreover, our group is also planning to optimize development resources to fit the market environment of each enterprise. That is corporate speak. For example, by shifting some of the amusement device development staff to the consumer business, which is a growing field. Consumer business, okay. I don't know what consumer business they'd have for Sega stuff, but okay. Anyway, Sega's consumer business segment is comprised, oh, here it is, of the console and PC games team and the smartphone game teams. Oh, God, smartphone stuff. Yeah. All right, well, they're still going to be doing stuff, obviously. But to me, it sounds like, yeah, they don't want to have to manage any of the physical shit anymore, locations and retail stuff. And they want out of that. It looks like a lot of it. So,
All right. Going back to, because I had to look myself, the Sega Sammy merger happened in 2004.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, all right. So, it sounds like you're still going to have some of these buildings around. Once we got everything under control, people will hopefully flock to arcades and to retail business space again.
It sounds more like a handing over of the keys as much as, you know, shutting down anything.
Sure. We'll see. We'll see. Real quick, Ian, we're now closing in on the holiday season.
We are.
And Thanksgiving. You can give thanks at oldbitnintendo.com. We got RBI baseball stickers. That can be stocking stuffers. We got See You Podcast Now pins that you can fit 14 of those in a stocking at least. And certain NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks.
You could kill someone with that stocking.
Yeah, you can. It'd be like, you know.
These are heavy.
Full Metal Jacket. And you put the soap inside a sock.
Say the old sock full of quarters.
Yeah, there you go.
From
you can do that. Or the NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks. Make a great gift right there. My display, Ian. My display. And also, I'm on Cameo, cameo.com/PatConTree. I haven't plugged that in a bit there. For all your shout-out needs, birthdays, holidays, if I'm going to give thanks to you, I can do that, cameo.com/PatConTree. Sad news, Ian, with Alex Trebek passing away at age 80.
Yeah, that was a bummer. That one hit home. Like many, many people, I grew up watching Jeopardy. It was on every day at
7:30.
Yeah.
Wheel of Fortune 7. It was a power hour.
And I'd always watch it with my mom. I think Alex Trebek was one of the more comforting television presences and personalities that was out there. He made knowledge cool. And, I mean, from all accounts, he absolutely adored and loved his job. There were stories going around. I think Ken Jennings posted one about how it was prior to his diagnosis, but Alex Trebek was having a really bad day, like, before going on doing a tournament. And he could tell he was having a rough one. He was in pain. Something was going on. And as soon as he heard his name go off, he went out and did his job. And, you know, Ken Jennings asked him about it. And he was like, it's so rare these days to see someone who truly loves what they do for a living. Where it is their element. It's not something that they just enjoy. It becomes them. And he very much, I guess, felt his best when he was, you know, in front of the contestants and cheering them on and stuff like that. So yeah, it was sad. He has new episodes coming out up until the end of the year. His final episode will actually air on Christmas Day, which is kind of a nice little coincidence.
It's Christmas Day? Wow. Yeah. Yep. That'll be sad, right? You know it's coming. It's like, oh, God, we have one more left. And obviously, they'll probably do a memorial thing on that show for him afterwards or something. He didn't get to do his sign-off like some of the other hosts have done, fortunately. Wow, they filmed that far in advance, huh?
He was filming up until October 29th, so he filmed as recently as 2 weeks ago.
Wow. And, wow. Up till the end, that's an entertainer. That's wow. Yeah, I watched it. Obviously, when you're like 8, 9 years old, you get more out of Wheel of Fortune when you're a kid than that, for the most part. But, you know, I enjoyed it. The NES games probably helped a lot, playing the NES game that I borrowed from my grandparents' neighbor had it, so I always would play Jeopardy. And plus, I had it on the PC. Wheel of Fortune, we had Jeopardy on the PC. So at that point, it's funny. Think about it. He wasn't on the show that long. We were playing just a few years then.
Yeah, I always kind of, I mean, because I remember him my whole life, I honestly didn't know that I thought he started at some point in the 70s. He started in 1984.
Yeah.
That's when he started. I mean, that's still an incredibly long run.
36 years.
That's insane. But I honestly didn't know when he started. I thought that block went back further. And no, that was like a big primetime push for those game shows.
See, I enjoyed him on Classic Concentration when he did it. The daytime, especially in the summer, you'd watch the daytime. The lighter, we'll just say lighter game shows. And he was on in the morning, whenever it was, like 10:30 or whatever, or 11 or... He was on there. He that was his secondary. You know, that's the easy job, doing Classic Concentration. You show up, you do Classic Concentration, then you do Jeopardy. You know, like it's a lot of hosts did that. They had like a couple of different game shows like that. And I used to love Classic Concentration as well back in the day. No, nice guy. And like you said, celebrating. We don't celebrate enough intelligence and education and knowledge in U.S. culture. We don't. It's sad that we don't. And then that's why we're. For first world countries, we're not even the top 10 usually of a lot of these, you know, for math and for science and for
especially in the
close.
Past few years, it feels like there's been a real pandering to idiocy. And
what did I coin the phrase? It's arrogant ignorance, but it's also thinking that it's the inability to decipher what is true information or what is horse shit. Like that's part of the educational process is being able to filter, do research and figure out from different sources what are facts. And that's obliterated. That's been obliterated. It's just, well, I saw a YouTube video. It must be true. Like that's where we are now.
Right.
And it's like, what? Do you know that person made that YouTube video? Doesn't, you know, probably wasn't educated that well and just cobbled together some thoughts. You're going to trust that person over someone that studied something for 25 years? You know, and
well, they said what I like to hear. So
yeah, it's confirming your biases and worldview versus, you know, people that study things their entire lives and might know a little bit better. But that's okay. But anyway, Alex Trebek sounds like a great guy. No one had anything bad to say about the guy. Here's to you, Alex Trebek. And he died like a week after Sean Connery did, which was funny because we brought him on the podcast a few weeks ago out of nowhere, Sean Connery. And they died like a week later after that.
We killed them.
Can't kill James Bond. It's impossible. Real quick, Ian, before the show started, in our little not even call it prep. We don't even do prep. Some podcasts do prep. We just say, let's start. But we discovered that Arcade One Up through a Twitter post. They have HDMI little consoles, like how Retrobit did their Generations console. I had no idea they were coming out with these. So there's a couple of them. There's a Mega Man one, which has Mega Man 1 through 6. And it has a 6-button controller with Little Mega Man on it.
It's an awful controller.
Controller's terrible.
It's gross. It's actually repulsive to look at. It's a disgusting controller.
It's like the second Sega Saturn controller, kind of.
No.
Kind of. The shape. Because there's even space for two triggers
sure.
at the top. There's space for two triggers, but I don't... see if there's triggers on it. I try to find an angle where they got rid of the triggers. So there's that. And then there's also a Namco one with 10 games for $40. And, you know, they're the standard. You get your HDMI out. There's a USB in. I said, I think you can put your own ROMs on because there's emulators in there and play them. And I had no idea Arcade 1UP was going to get into this market. I guess they figured, hey, why not? Everyone else has. We'll do it. And it's Christmas. We can sell them. Are we getting to the point where we're just done with these sort of things anymore? With these, like, these little all-in-one...
I feel like they must be selling at, I mean, to, at some level for people to keep pumping them out. And, I mean, the Mega Man games are popular. 1 through 6 is a, you know, that's a nice little bundle. But you can get that, in, I mean, you can get that Mega Man collection on just about any system for about half that price. And you can play it with a controller that doesn't look like absolute trash.
Yeah, I think that's what is, that D-pad looks horrible.
It looks creaky. That whole controller looks creaky. Like, I feel like you pick that up and you hold it in your hand and you can feel that plastic twist in your hands. It's just that cheap.
Why in 2020
shitty plastic
are there still D-pads with the circular base underneath? The patent ran out on the Nintendo's D-pad a while ago. You can do a Nintendo D-pad on these, or at least you'll need the circular Genesis style. Like, why would you think that's better to still have that? Why?
I don't know.
Especially for NES platformers, it will never be as precise as that.
And thanks for the six buttons on that.
Six buttons for Mega Man 1 through 6. Yep. Well, I guess you can use Turbo on you know, a couple or whatever. But the fact that this is also an emulation device, there you go. You can put on Genesis games and Super Nintendo. So for that. But the Namco one, it looked like it was using, at the very least, I saw a review, Galaga 88 was on there, and that was looked like the PC Engine ROM. And the Dig Dug one was the arcade, so they're not, at least they're not the NES ones. At least the, as we know, I hate when these use the NES arcade ROMs. I want to throw something at that point. It's horrifying.
Is it just ease of use? I mean, that's all I can think of.
Well, the emulator, I guess, is cheap on the chip. Whatever, right. It's been around for whatever 20 years on these handhelds. Maybe, I don't know. It costs you a little more money maybe to get the ROMs for the arcade. I don't know. The emulators themselves, I mean, what's on these things? Like, it's MAME? They just took MAME and threw it on? I don't know. But, yeah. It's just interesting to see that, because I didn't think that you'd still have these coming out at a pace of multiple ones a year. But, like, it's Christmas. Stocking stuff for $40. It's not horrible. It's not horrifying, right?
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
Mm? Mm. All right. Were we on SNL on Saturday? Did you see that?
I watched it. I don't like SNL very much, but...
We did a Mario 35 little edutainment type sketch, and everyone was texting me, oh my God, they're doing a parody of video game years. And I watched it. I was like, yeah, I could see that. It was more like a overview, but... So basically, they interview some people talking about, oh, Mario's 35 years, what are your memories? And there's like green... It's a green screen thing, and people are talking about Mario. Then there's two people on the screen that... May or may not be me and Ian, a parody of talking about, hey, it's our memories of Super Mario Brothers, and then it quickly and hysterically sort of transitions into a story about some guy's balls popping, which is funny, and it keeps going back to that. So everyone sent that to me on Saturday night, and it was fun. It was a funny skit.
I remember taking my bike over to my grandma's house once and riding it up and down the street real fast, and I slipped right off the seat and did kind of the same thing they talk about in the video. Crushed my nuts and then flipped right over the front of the handlebars. Happened so fast I didn't know what happened.
Was it a 10 speed?
It was...
BMX bike?
It was some sort of shitty bike.
Some Huffy? Like some BMX, yeah, wannabe some, bike?
Right, exactly. It was some
Everyone
sort of
had the Huffy wannabe bike.
BMX wannabe. I'm pretty sure it was a Huffy. Yeah.
The $90 Kmart specials that weren't as good as the ones from a bike store, but they got the job done.
It had two wheels and you could pedal it.
Mine was blue. Mine was like blue. Blue finish. Blue wheels. Blue and like chrome was mine. It got the job done. I rode it for like 7-8 years. I rode it until I got... mountain bike when I was like 15.
Yeah, they last.
I mean, that was fine. The mountain bike I had problems because we actually went off road with that, and then that was right before shocks and suspension were became standard. They were expensive still, so I broke my rims like 3-4 times on my mountain bike because I'd have shocks on it.
They just cracked when you would go off something.
They'd bend,
yeah,
and then like they rub up against that part of the rim would rub up against the brakes, the brake pads when it went around. So you had to have someone hammer out or buy new ones. It happened like 2 or 3 times. So of course, my rich cousin, Chris, had his Diamondback with the, he had the shocks, of course, because he had to get everything else brand new. He had the, he liked the $700 mountain bike. Mine was only like $300. Shut up, Chris. I'm not jealous that you got all those Valiant comics that were worth a ton of money in the '90s. Well, they're now worthless.
Oh yeah, probably worth.
I got ride number 3 and 4. They only made 20,000 of them. Great, good for you, Chris. You're not actually reading them. Sorry, what was I saying? Super Mario Brothers 35 sketch. Someone actually left a comment. We'll get to it eventually on the listener voicemails about what would it take to get video game years the '90s back. So that's what
that
me
comes
that
up like every year.
I mean, this is a voice message about sure. It. It's like, hey, maybe there's someone in the rich out there that'll sponsor it. But anyway, so yeah, that was it. And this hectic week last week. Just to go back to that, I didn't sleep well for like 3 days straight last week.
Neither did I.
It was a very nervous time between like Tuesday, like and Friday. I was like, I hadn't watched CNN in like years, and all of a sudden I'm watching the masterful John King work that board for days on end. The GOAT, John King.
I didn't turn on any TV coverage, but I was checking the news sites a bit more frequently than I would have liked to.
John King's like the Alex Trebek of working the board. He's very calm. He's not pretentious. He gives you the facts straight. He doesn't talk down to you, but you know, he keeps things smooth and casual. But you know, love John King. Everyone was going nuts for John King doing this stuff. There was a meme about like him having nub fingers by the time it was over from working the board so much.
Sure.
The magic board, you know, yeah. Zooms in on counties and outs, and he knows all the counties in the U.S. somehow. That was the fun thing about people watching the election. It sounds like worldwide, even people are watching the cover. People internationally, wow, I'm learning so much about all these different counties and random states in the U.S. And it's like, hey, but in all seriousness, I did almost not cheer up and get misty-eyed, but to see people throughout the U.S. not just coming out and voting in record numbers. Obviously, that's fantastic, and that should happen every time. Not take democracy for granted like we usually do. But all the poll workers, all the volunteers, all the people counting the ballots, all the people that are poll watchers. That's amazing that people do that, and that's how you have a functioning democracy, is having the people in place. I think it's important enough to go out and do those things. Without that, it's tough. And that's everywhere from Alaska to California to Michigan to Pennsylvania to Georgia, everywhere. People have to do that.
Oh, yeah. I think everyone that I encountered when I went and voted on Tuesday. I mean, to be out there doing that, especially right now during COVID, is pretty big. And
that's
they had a really good system down, and it was fast and efficient. And yeah, I mean, kudos to them. Absolutely.
The expression is democracy is messy. Well, it has to be, because it's all in our hands versus some sort of authoritarian system where the outcome is known beforehand because you have no say in it. Like, so it's messy for a reason. This is what happens. It gets worked out. The U.S. is 50 different states, widely different geographically, the U.S., and in terms of demographics. And so this is how it happens. And every state does their own thing. They have all their different own rules for when they count the votes, when they start accepting things, when they stop accepting them. So, like I said, it's messy, but we get there. So, but no, I got misty-eyed. I was like, oh, look at these poll people in this state, in this state, and in this state, and they're just slaving away counting ballots at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m.
Doing their thing.
They're doing their thing for the good of the country. Look at that, getting a little tear running down my face there. So.
All right.
Anything else to add? Wow, the heat kicked on. I didn't turn the heat off. All right. Ian.
Trying to cook me.
The PS5 is loose. The juice is loose.
Well, 2 days. 2 days it comes out. Comes out on the 12th.
Oh, everyone has it already, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's review units all over the place.
And then the Xbox is what?
Today, I think.
Today?
Yeah.
So the PS5 is getting reviewed everywhere. I saw a Burger King commercial. They're giving it away. They give someone a big burger and a big, and it's like, oh, you want a PS5? And people are going nuts. You see that commercial?
No.
So we're at the next gen right now with the PlayStation, and we have a lot of people coming out with reviews for this thing. How have you read a lot of reviews?
I have not. I mean, but everyone seems to be fair. I haven't read a lot of them, but the general consensus that I read has been positive so far. Games are loading faster. The menu system seems fine.
That was a big thing I saw. The loading times were like cut in half or even more sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, both of what I've seen on the Xbox and on the PlayStation 5 has been really promising in that regards. You know, especially with, I mean, they're mostly playing old games right now. You know, the previous generation games on it, so it's easy for them to do the comparison between, say, a PS4 and a PS5 or an Xbox One and an Xbox Series. Fucking dumb. Dumb names.
You don't like the Series X or Series S? Or
I've already whined about it. But yeah, it's interesting. It's nice to see that. It's going to be the PlayStation 5 will have some truly next gen stuff, you know, coming out. And it'll be nice to see how well that runs. It'll be a while before we see anything fairly unique on the Xbox.
It's been a while.
Oh, no.
It'll be a while, actually.
but yeah, I mean, I'm glad people have got them if they want them and they're happy. I honestly probably will not end up with any of these until sometime next year.
It's be hard to get them for the first. Yeah, that's the first part of this. But also, it's like, is there a rush to get a lot of these right now? I mean, is there really a rush? If most of these games you can play already, you know? So, I mean,
I could be... I mean, it's kind of expensive for an impulse purchase, you know?
What was it, $500 for the PS5?
Yeah, it's $500.
$500 for the standard one?
But I almost kind of wanted to try to find one this week just so I'd have something to freaking talk about for the rest of the year on the podcast. But there's just nothing coming out at launch that seems like something that I would need to have. I want to play the Demon's Souls remake, but I don't like need to be the first person to do it. So
here's a chart. We're going to discuss it, this article here, but before we get into it, there's a chart of the loading times of PS5 versus PS4 here. Because right as of right now, but before the exclusives come out that actually use this technology, this is what you're getting out of this, right? So some are significant, some are not. I'm looking at it surprisingly. So like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, cut down from 170 seconds to load it. That's 3 minutes it takes to load the game to 108. So that's a drop of like 30%, 40%, something like that. Red Dead Redemption 2, 142 seconds. So that's like 2.5 minutes down to a minute 20. So that's like that's almost cut in half right there. Some are insignificant. There's one from, let's see, 79. Ghost of Tsushima is 79 to 61. So that's a small little drop, but not huge. So that's what you're getting out of this right now. You get the solid state drive getting you quicker loading into the games. I had no idea some of these games took 3 minutes to load. I had no clue that like something like Borderlands 3 took 3 minutes to load up. Holy crap! What do you just grab a cup of coffee while you wait? You click. No idea.
That's what you use your phone for. That's why we all have zero attention span, because
you can move on to something else.
You immediately just pick up something else.
So this article is from Kotaku, Australia, that a few people sent this to us about that. It's about, talk about the frame rate. Look at Miles Morales. It's fantastic. It's performing very well. And then people are saying, Pat, read the last. Oh, real quick, the controller. People are liking this controller, this DualSense controller.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. People seem to be pretty big on it.
That they seem to be really cool that it's got the DualSense, so the vibration and haptic feedback is a little bit better this time about.
Yeah, I heard like the triggers do fun stuff and things like that. I'm still not sold on the look of the controller, but if it's comfortable, I mean, I'll be fine.
The look?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the same standard layout, right? I mean,
yeah, it's just a little bit bigger and rounder, which I think is going to be beneficial for it. I just don't like the weird white and black. I'm simply purely talking about aesthetics. I don't like the way it looks.
Oh, okay. You don't want to get your Cheeto cheese on the whiteness there?
I try to avoid Cheetos when I'm playing games.
But does the PS5 really matter? So this is why some people sent this article, is that the reviewer here, and his name is Ian Walker. What's with Ian's writing articles like this? Anyway, Ian from The Atlantic wrote that really bad Nintendo article a few years ago where you weren't on the podcast. Asking, does the PS5 really matter? So the article shifts from talking about the PS5 and reviewing it to it's talking about reasons not to be excited about the PS5. It talks about COVID-19, Americans being out of work, talking about the election stuff happening, and a new old white man becoming the president and things like that. And this is why people brought this to my attention, because they were like, this is what, like, what is this part of the review? What are you doing here? And I can see why you would bring this up in a console review, but at the same time, I don't know what part of your audience is here to read that part of a PS5 review. And that's with any entertainment. It's like when you're focusing on entertainment medium or product, you're there for a specific reason. And this isn't me trying to, you know, it's easy to bash Kotaku. It really is, especially in the past 7-8 months when three or four really good journalists have left and it's already seemingly gone back to the shitter really quickly, Kotaku, for a lot of people. But we understand that right now the world pretty much sucks in general. I understand that. Ian, I think Ian gets that. We're in a rough spot with a lot of things this year right now. It's sort of like the understood. You don't have to say it back to us. So to a lot of people, obviously, entertainment's an escape. It's a way to take your mind off things. That's a reason why Ian said that, you know, video games this year it's blowing wide open.
Yeah.
People need the escape, or we go fucking nuts if we have to be constantly redirected back to reality. And I think that's why people have a problem with this, is that it's understood. And at this point, you're telling me a reason not to be excited for something that I'm reading about. The only reason I'm at the article is because I'm excited about it. Now you're telling me not to be excited about it. And it truly is pretentious. I don't want to take personal shots at this person, but I'm going to say to the writer that if you really feel like this is not to be something to be excited about, ask someone else to write the article for you and don't review it. Don't accept the free console that you are going to get reviewed in. You know, this isn't like shut up and game sort of thing, but it's really spun out in a direction here that I'm just like, man, okay, this is the example when people say, get this shit out of, you know, the coverage. Like, this is like the prime example when I see it, because most of the time it's like, yeah, it has something to do with it. This has nothing to do with covering the PS5 to me. Absolutely nothing.
I mean, my take on it goes a couple different places. I read it and I see something like this, and I try to understand where the person's coming from. And I think that there was probably some, you know, they've spent a week, 2 weeks, however many weeks reviewing this system, playing with the hottest new toy, trying out new games, and as is their job. And I think that there is probably I want to give the person the benefit of the doubt. And I think that where this part originally came from was perhaps a tinge of their own guilt.
Oh, it definitely is when you read it, yeah.
Realizing that, okay, this is what I'm doing, and not everyone can do this, and I'm in this position where I can, and that's great. But you need to make sure that your self-flagellation does not turn into attacking the people who are reading your very article for feeling excited about something.
Sure.
$500 is not cheap by any means, but it's also not so enormously expensive that it's out of the reach for any number of people who have been looking forward to this, saving for it, and planning for it. As you've said, we all need our escapes right now, and we absolutely do. And people will argue me, but I don't think there's necessarily a problem with, if you have taken the time to save up the money, you're allowed, you don't have to live in misery just because things are miserable. You're allowed to buy yourself something nice. You're allowed to buy something that is going to keep your mental health up and going. If this is your hobby, it's like, I'm not rich. I don't know if I'm going to have hours at my job next week because cases are going up in San Diego, but I still buy records because when I'm at home, I don't want to be stewing in misery. I buy something to listen to because it makes me happy, and it's in my budget to be able to do such a thing. And I feel like that's unfortunately how this is being read. It started off as sort of a, wow, I think, you know, I'm a little lucky. I've been able to play this. But then you go off and you just list all these reasons why people shouldn't be excited about it. And it's taking the fire out of maybe one of the few things that a lot of people are looking forward to this year. And it's not just PS5. It can be PS5. It can be Xbox One. But I think it goes, can be applied to the purchase of anything during a crisis. We don't need to just survive. We're allowed to try to enjoy our life. This is not the Kardashians bragging about how they went to a private island.
Oh, had their private party.
To have a private party so they could pretend things were normal for once in their life when they're living, I'm sure, a very fine, normal, rich existence.
Sure.
This isn't that. This is someone going out and buying a video game console. A video game
console. Which we've done for 40 years.
Right. And yes, it's expensive. And yes, there are people right now who are suffering and don't have the money, and it sucks. But at the same point in time, don't rain on someone's parade. There are plenty of people who aren't made of money who are buying this, and they're buying it because they know it's going to provide them some respite.
Yeah, the whole does it really matter argument is like, well, no, if you want to reduce things to it, me and Ian can be wearing potato sacks right now for clothes instead of having...
No, if you want to reduce it, none of the shit we're talking about matters. I mean, but that's the problem. You get into that sort of reductiveness, and suddenly you are left very, very miserable because you realize, shit, none of it really matters.
This gets into a sociological conversation or psychology, but this is how I try to live my life, or say, you control what you control to the extent you can control it. And then, yes, you can think about other things, but you cannot let it drive your existence. The amount of thought you're putting into it has to be proportional, at least at some point, to what you can give back towards that. If not, you're going to be miserable for the sake of being miserable. You can acknowledge things that are bad without making those things that exist miserable to your daily life, because at the end of the day, that's not going to change anything. You're just acting more miserable. So when I see things like this, I also think about perspective when it comes to this. Because, yes, things are not peachy right now overall. They've been a lot worse in the past for a lot of other people, though. During the Depression, you know, when unemployment was ridiculous, people were still trying to have fun and do things. During World War II, when literally, there's lists in towns of people in World War II where the people went off to war and came and never came back. Like, every town in America, lots of people died from World War II. And during World War II, though, they still had movies. They still had sports. People still try to get by, even though it was a really bad time then. So, you know, it's what this comes down to is that this got through the editorial process, though. This was deemed okay. If I was the editor and saw this, I'd be like, okay, what is this? And so when I see people take shots at Kotaku, this is like the prime example. It's like, this is it. And so... That's all I'm going to say. This is going to be a whole Kotaku rant. But yeah, it's really weird to see something like this. If you really feel like this, you shouldn't be writing about video games. You shouldn't be accepting the free $500 console if you feel guilty about it. Like, you're not going to transfer your guilt onto the audience necessarily, and it sounds like that's what you're trying to do. So it's just fucking weird.
Yeah, I mean. I'm not the writer. If you felt like addressing it is simple, I realize people aren't, not everyone's in the position to buy this. And if you can't, you know, you're not missing out on, a brand new world. And if you can get it, it's fun and I'm enjoying it. You're allowed to acknowledge these feelings, but to take it into a different direction like this and go on about it for multiple paragraphs is questionable.
Yeah. Come on, Ian, not our Ian. Come on, Ian. Got a PS5. Tons of people will be dying to get a PS5. Don't be able to get it this holiday season because they don't have the money or they just can't find it. You know, be happy. You're writing about a console for a living here. I mean, that's fantastic that you can do that. You're living the dream there, buddy. Things will get better in the world a little bit, but at the same time, the world's never going to be perfect. So if you really want to get technical, there's always going to be shit going on in the world until the world is gone. That if you really want to drill down and focus on, you can never be truly happy. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, Ian, this is a Kickstarter that came up for an HDMI Nintendo 64 called the Warrior 64 that, as of today, has less than 10 days left, 9 days to go, already reached its goal here. This was something, this is from InTech doing this, InTech Gaming. I was aware that this was going to be coming out eventually because I was in communication with a rep from InTech for, I think, 6-7 months, going back to the spring, about this. But I was not made aware of this Kickstarter, and I don't know how it wasn't brought up on the hashtag on Twitter until recently here. So what this is, there's two different things you can pledge here. You can pledge to a do-it-yourself kit to basically mod your N64. It's an it's a board that converts it to HDMI out. So that's the one tier you can get. And that tier is, let's see, what's that tier at here? $95 US. So that's the kit there. And you get a gamepad with that for $95, which is like a Hori Mini looking pad.
It looks like a recreation of the Hori Mini.
Which a few different companies have done.
Retrobit's done one.
Yeah.
Hyperkin basically used that design for their wireless controller. Yeah.
So that's the first thing that's available. But what's more interesting than me, because there are other do-it-yourself kits available on the market here, which we'll talk about in a bit. But there's also a tier for getting just a console, a prefabbed console that's HDMI on here. And that tier was at $150. It's limited to about 500, it looks like here. Well, let's see. It's limited to 500 black and 500 green. So with that, you get the console. You also get the Warrior 64 gamepad. And they did their own new shell, their own new console shell.
Right.
That's a little more angular. It just looks a little bit different.
It looks... I'm not sure what they were going for, but if they wanted to make something that looked polygonal and looked of the era, it screams that for me. I don't know how to put it. I don't know that I personally like the design, but I think it's a design
it
that it's a yes, it's a design that conveys that screams 32/64-bit polygonal gaming.
You wouldn't have been surprised if Nintendo did that design. Like, it's almost like that could have fit.
No, yeah, it does. It very much fits. I'm not exactly. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it definitely fits.
So the question to me now is, because it's not entirely clear what's inside the console. I assume, obviously, they made their own RGB board,
right?
And then
HDMI board,
converting it to the HDMI out, right? Mm-hmm. What the heck is in this? When I spend $150, what am I actually getting? Is it regular N64 guts? And then you put this do-it-yourself kit in there, and then they solder it for me and then gave it back to me in the new console shell? Or is it a whole new N64 board they made in here?
A clone board.
A clone board,
right,
with that includes the RGB to HDMI. What is going on here? And as of this recording, I emailed them asking for clarity on that, and I haven't heard back yet. Because at $150 with a controller, there's not a huge amount of margin there for InTech if they took the guts of a pre-existing console.
Right.
They had to source a 1,000 N64s and then mod them themselves, which takes time. That's annoying. Take the shells off, put the new shell on, and then send it out. Like, that's a lot of work and plus a controller for $150. That's a pretty damn good deal at $150 when you look at it like that.
Yeah, I mean, $150 for a modded N64 is great.
With the controller.
With the controller is... See, how do I phrase this properly? It to me, it would be great. Like, if you were just selling an N64 that was pre-modded, controller, mod board, everything, $150, I think that would probably be a very good price.
Sure.
So is that what we're getting here? If so, then I think that's pretty good, but I have problems with cannibalizing old systems to make new systems. If it's not an N60, if it's not cannibalized N64 parts, what the heck's in there? What's the compatibility like, and is it worth the money that you're spending?
Exactly.
Those are my questions.
Because I go on eBay, and it looks like you can buy ones that are modded with the board, because you can buy these boards. So the one that my source told me about, it's the N64 RGB board, and it costs you $55 Australian, Pat Math, it's like $40 US, where they send you the RGB board. You get it, you mod it yourself, and you do the HDMI out, and there you go. So on eBay, you can buy a modded one for $160, just an N64 console with the board probably inside, and it has the HDMI out on it. So when you look at that, you're like, yeah, this is a damn good deal if it's using original N64 guts.
And then I have problems.
Then you have problems because it's like,
why are you cannibalizing it?
Where did you find $1,000 to keep the cost down? Because Ian, I'm thinking they must have gone, since they're based in Hong Kong, or they go to a bunch of junk shops in Asia to see if they can find them for like $20 each US, and then at that point, then you're making some profit margin with the board, you know, but then it's your time, and the controllers don't cost a huge amount if you get them in bulk made. But that's what I'm thinking about here. Now I'm thinking about, would have been better, I guess. Maybe it would have been a lot more money to make your own clone board. No one's done it yet, that we know of, a clone N64 board. So,
right, Hyperkin talked about having one, but
forever.
It's never come out.
Yeah, or they thought it was going to be an emulation base. But so this is why I'm like, this is cool. But yes, the cannibalizing potentially is what bothers, I think, the both of us at that point.
Right.
Plus, it's not a sustainable business model. You can't sell 10,000 of these. Go out and get rid of all the, you know, aftermarket N64 consoles.
Well, and I think that's what that's why the kit exists. You can buy the kit with the board and the shell and all that, and do it to yourself. Do it to your own console, and put it in there. And that's why I think I'm leaning towards it's probably cannibalization of consoles, because you would have to have your clone board printed to the exact same specifications as the original board to be able to, you know, sell a shell that you can fit your old N64 board into after it's been modded.
Sure. And then plus, when you look at the spacing of the controller ports and everything, it's like, yeah, they probably just took out the old shell, they soldered it and put it back in. But it's 1,000 of them, though. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
There. That's a lot of work. As we're recording this, they've got 110 people that backed the green console, which is like the see-through jungle. And then the smoky, they call it the black, but it's like the smoke one. They have, that one has 159 backers. So a lot of ones left here. Like I said, I'm interested in this, but I guess it's the ethical issue of the cannibalization of parts versus, I mean, that's the only way they can do it. So yeah, it's up to you guys if you want to get the kit, but keep in mind, we have to be transparent. Kits like this exist already.
Oh yeah. This isn't brand new.
They just took it to the next step, offering you the console I like these shells a lot, and you get the controller thrown in. What do these controllers usually go for, just in general? What is the Retrobit one?
Retrobit stuff is usually like $20, I think.
Let's see. Retrobit N64, they charge $25 for their
25.
It's called the Tribute 64. It looks roughly, it's roughly the same thing. And there's the Retro Fighters one as well, which is $25. That's the fighting version one as well. So all right, it's like a $25 value on here. So you're getting the console for $125 only retail, which is damn good at that point. If they're selling the mod kit itself for $95, that's you're only paying $30 more for the console at that point. That's like really, I'm trying to wrap my head around the pricing here. It's almost like
That's where I'm having trouble too, because especially right now in pandemic times, N64s are not $30.
No, just for the console alone. I mean, what, $60
at least? I would say
they must have. Well, this is pre-pandemic. They must have knew this was coming a year ago. Then if these are cannibalized and went out and just sourced them from all over,
sure.
Went to junk shops, maybe some places in Japan where they have them stacked up. Because we've seen some of those, you know, some of those stores are being sold, or storage units where they are stacked up, the N64s. I mean, I've owned the most amount of N64s I've owned at one time. I probably owned 9 or 10 from the swap meet. They used to be like $20. You get N64 for $20 from the swap meet. So it's possible, but not in this past 6-7 months, though. It's a little bit tougher to get these. So anyway, so check it out here. If you're up for the console, check it out, or the do-it-yourself kit. But like I said, the kits exist. They have existed. Like I said, you can get prefabbed, looks like modded ones on eBay as well. But they're more money than this one with a custom shell, you know, and controllers. That's why I'm still thinking about, like, this is either a great deal or there's shenanigans going on with this.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit of both.
All right, Ian. Are you down with the TikTok? Are you on doing your 15-second wacky?
No, I don't have a TikTok dances account. I could not video myself.
You don't think you can get more exposure for the store by doing wacky?
Ooh, no, TikToks. So GameStop is being gross again as we head into Black Friday. GameStop has announced that they are doing a TikTok challenge. For the company. Be creative. Rope in your team and have fun with it. Don't worry. You can't look as bad as the event team does, reads the prompt for GameStop's latest employee contest, the Incisive TikTok Dance Challenge. I'm reading this off of Kotaku. Stores are supposed to send their best red wine challenge videos. Any dance routine that's set to UB40's Red Red Wine. Okay.
The song from 30 years ago?
Yeah. To the marketing firm Incisive, the winning store, here we go, will get awarded an Echo 8, Echo Auto, $100 Visa gift card, and 10 additional labor hours to use during Black Friday week. It's that last part that really gets me. So I don't know what an Echo 8 or an Echo Auto
are. It's an Amazon, like, tablet-type device.
Okay.
It looks like. Smart. It's a smart device.
$100 Visa gift card and 10 additional labor hours.
First of all, wait, it's one gift card for the whole store? Or is it per employee?
The winning store will get an Echo 8, an Echo Auto.
What are you going to arm wrestle for the prizes?
It's just the tip of the bad iceberg here. So this is awful for a couple of reasons. One, I promise you, no one likes doing this shit. They do it because the managers make them do it. And they're like, look at all the happiness that's going on in this horrible job. They love working here. They hate you for making them do this. They do. No one wants to fucking take part in a TikTok dance challenge for their fucking job. And someone's going to come at me and be like, well, okay, fine. Maybe you would. But no one really wants to do this.
85% don't want to do this, we'll just say. We'll...
The majority of people walking into their minimum wage job do not want to be told to fucking dance for money. Like a shitty entertainer. It's fucking... It's awful.
Just so that GameStop corporate could then, like, string these together and laugh at them in their fucking boardroom
meetings. And pat themselves on the back and be like, look at the culture of fun.
Look at the culture of fun we foster.
They love working here. I can feel okay while I go and eat Thanksgiving dinner and they slave away on Black fucking Friday. It's horse shit. Dance for me, poors. That's what they're fucking saying.
Imagine what you can do with all those prizes, the contest reads.
Well, so... And then we get to the last part. You can win 10 additional labor hours. Hey, so do this contest so you can win the ability of having someone else come in on Black Friday so it's not so fucking shitty because you're going to be understaffed. Because that's how it works. Even on Black Friday, corporate places particularly have a set number of hours they can schedule. They have a hour. Sure. They have a budget of hours they can use.
Sure.
Because the more hours you schedule, of course, the more money you're paying, and they don't want you to do that. So there's always, in all jobs, but especially corporate ones, there's always that shit from up top to get your hours down lower. So you're competing just for the ability to work on Black Friday.
So it'll give one or two employees a handful of hours to come in that weekend or on Black Friday to help out. Maybe they need those hours, so it benefits.
It benefits them and it benefits the store because the store will be run better. But
they're allowed to have extra hours, so that everyone kind of wins more money. It's less stressful.
You win the ability to have a less shitty Black Friday.
And someone who might wanted to work a few hours who couldn't now gets that money. So if it comes down to $200. Basically, to the store, to the employees, basically. If it's $20 an hour, we'll just say
it's
10 hours.
Not, but yeah.
I get it. It's $200. You're winning $200 that you can dole out to your employees on that day. Maybe one person works 6 hours. Maybe a few people work 3 hours each. That's nothing. 10 hours. That's nothing. That's not like 30 hours or 40 hours that you get made for the weekend. That would be nice. Maybe you get an extra employee on each day from Thursday to, like, that would be something. 10 hours is fucking nothing.
And then you look at it and
like, one store.
And like we
one
said,
store.
One store, and it says the store gets awarded an Echo 8, an Echo Auto, a $100 Visa gift card, and the 10 additional hours. So after you make your employees dance like fucking chumps.
One store!
After you make your employees dance like chumps, and you get the rewards, I guarantee you what any manager is going to do, then it's going to be, who's going to sell the most fuck-all subscriptions to something or another during Black Friday?
Oh,
who's going to get the most? Who's going to get the most pre-orders? We're going to make it fun. So you don't even get the prizes you win.
God.
You just get to compete for those prizes again and really piss off all of your coworkers.
And this isn't one store per district?
It's such an awful, awful idea.
What, how many stores are in North America?
I don't know.
Like 400 or whatever, just say?
Yeah, probably.
One store GameStop. You're like one store. Like, this is enraging. If this was like, oh, we're going to pick one store per general manager area or whatever, district. So it comes out to like, what, we'll say 50 stores or 100 stores. Okay. This is bullshit.
It's fucking gross.
On every level. But the fact that it's one store that I have the amount of money of these products, like in my wallet, I could pay out what corporate is paying out for this contest. That's how bad this contest is. This is like $400 worth of stuff. I guess the Echo 8s are probably like $100, whatever. This is like $300 to $400 worth of shit that you're giving to one store. Be creative. Rope in your team and have fun with it. It's
rope like, in your team. Badger your team until they finally break down and say, fine, we'll fucking dance for 3 minutes.
Oh, there's one. Here's a clip of one on here on TikTok.
Not
oh,
doing
oh, oh, this is the red, red wine one.
Yes, that's what we said.
But they're doing the Macarena.
No, that's fine. I'm not watching it. You can't make me watch it.
Or something
it.
Like, it's fucking awful.
I won't do that to them.
I am so glad, Ian, I am not working retail in the social media age, because I can imagine good old Suncoast pulling shit like this if I was at Suncoast in 2020. I can so picture that, because that's the closest analogy to me working at GameStop would have been Suncoast doing something like this. Oh, act out your favorite scene from a movie for a chance to get a free gift card to buy a VHS tape. Yeah, exactly. Your mind just goes blank, you know, stuff like that. It's humiliating to a small extent. It's infuriating because it's only one store, not even one per state. It's absolutely insane.
And like I said, you're totally winning prizes that the store manager is then going to hold over your head.
Potentially, yeah.
To make you...
Who wants the extra hours? Who wants to come in and make a little more money? Who wants the Echo?
Who wants the Echo? Well, we're going to see who gets the most pre-orders.
Yeah, if you do the most pre-orders, I'll give you this gift card by Christmas. It's like, so you can't even use the gift card.
It's gross. It's just it's
how
gross.
How many employees probably work at a standard GameStop? How many different employees do you have? Probably like 6 or 7.
Probably say 5 to 6. Yeah.
So there's not even barely enough prizes to give one each. Echo 8. Echo Auto, which goes in your car, the gift card. There's only three prizes.
There's three actual prizes in the actual hours.
So you could even give one to each employee.
If you divided those hours up into 2 5-hour shifts, you could, I guess, theoretically make sure everyone got something.
But it's not a prize to work more. It's just that I'm working more. It's not a prize. I mean, if that's where you're at, where it's a prize to work more during Black Friday or that weekend, I mean, that's not a good job. I know that we'd say working at GameStop can suck, but that's, wow. Woo! I got more angry the more we got into this. I thought, okay, this is bad, but now I got actually more angry.
No, it's horseshit, and I
feel for anyone who works at GameStop. I feel for you.
I genuinely hate this shit. The whole, it's all to make corporate look good. So they can take these snapshots and be like, look how much they love working for us. When they're talking shit about you the entire fucking time. Because you had this horrible idea.
Hey, GameStop, you haven't got anyone that was going to buy out your company before this. This isn't going to help you, you sell your company. That, oh, well, look at the morale of our customers doing the TikTok.
Our corporate culture.
AutoZone guy said, hey, Ian, you know what's popular? TikTok. Let's get them all on the TikTok. And I tell you what, you're not going to get the TikTok generation to come into your fucking GameStops either by seeing this. They're going to say, well, this is fucking lame. I'm going to go buy my games on my console on the store anyway. I'm not going to go into a GameStop to buy. So, like, that strategy, I thought that could have been the strategy, Ian. Like, oh, we're going to market to the Zoomers via TikTok. But they're not coming into your store anymore. They're not.
I might pop my head in and say, sorry, your manager made you do that. But then that's about it.
If you're a 16-year-old TikToker, be like, yeah, I saw it. It's really lame. I'm just going to say hi and go by at that point. Holy shit.
Yeah. Nothing else to say about that. Just dog shit all around.
Woo. And this is, and the best part about this, Ian, that we come back to this, we already know next year they're going to be closing at least 100 plus more stores. They're just keeping them open so they can get as much possible sales from the consoles and before Christmas. So imagine you go through this horse shit, you dance like a monkey for your corporate overlords, and then, hey, guess what, Ian, we're going to close your store in like February or like March. You're done.
Awful.
It's demeaning. It's disgusting. And I'm not saying, obviously it's going to be a shame when GameStop closes down because you have a bunch of employees. But when you see it run like this.
Yeah, I mean, I always say I don't want people to lose their jobs, but holy shit, just fucking put the nail in this coffin.
Just shoot it in two in the back of the head. Just put it out of its misery. If someone else isn't going to buy it, or if Amazon's not going to buy it and keeps them open, or I don't know who's going to buy these stores, these storefronts. At least in North America, I don't know who's going to buy them. They're going to keep them open elsewhere, probably in Europe and other parts of the world. They'll probably always have some GameStops around in some way, shape, or form. But in here, they're mostly going to be gone. All right. Is that it on that?
Yeah.
I got more angry the more I went there. I didn't think I was going to get that angry. Then the more I thought about it, I got more angry about
it's
that.
It's truly gross. It's awful.
It's disgusting.
Yep.
All right, Ian, we have a Patreon, don't we?
We do. Patreon.com/CU Podcast. What do you get there? I'll tell you what you get there. You get a writing once a week. You get the full video podcast. We do Hangouts, probably do mine next week. And you get to vote in these polls.
I'm doing my TikTok dance, Ian. We get extra podcast hours if we win.
It's gross.
We get a lot of hours.
Tell us about the poll topics. Tell us about it.
Your will to live just dropped after that GameStop segment.
Oh, it's sad.
Imagine if Trey did that to you guys.
I'd be like, bud, that's a good way to bury this 14-year friendship. I'm out.
All right. Third place, besides Super Mario 35, what retro games could make a good bet out? Royale games. I thought they would have won by now, 22%. In second place,
I've got ideas.
32%. What do you miss about gaming conventions? 30%. And in first place, Ian, patient gaming. Not in a hospital patient gaming. Playing new games, but at a fraction of the cost. The pros and cons of that approach to gaming, being a patient gamer.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. That's usually how I get into the new systems. I don't necessarily wait a whole generation like some people do, which I think this question originally talked about.
Waiting like several years?
Right. But it is always great. I've purchased systems very close to launch. Close enough to launch that for the purposes of this conversation, I'd say that I bought them at launch. I think I've only bought the Dreamcast itself on actual launch day. GameCube was, if it wasn't launch day, it was within a couple weeks. And it's fun. It's, you know, it's great to be, it's fun to be current. You know, you get to be in those conversations.
You're hip with the kids.
You're hip with the kids, exactly.
Did you play that new Grand Theft Auto?
So yeah, everyone likes to be able to talk about their hobbies currently, but there are just so many games that it does. And money's not infinite. Not everyone's got money. It's not always easy to find the reason to buy the new system. I bought my 360, I think 2 years after it came out, whenever Pac-Man CE came out. I bought my PlayStation 4. No? Leave me alone.
Okay, Ian.
I bought my PS4 about a year and a half after it came out. I bought my PS3 multiple years after it came out.
That was so expensive,
I bought my PS3 like 2 years before it was not...
Producing work?
Yeah, I bought it like I bought it in the last 2 years. I think it was made.
So like 13 two or 3 years or 14.
Yeah, who knows? But it's great because A, the system is cheaper, but you get to make use of the used game market, which is fantastic. And there is a unique joy to being able to buy current games. Like modern games come out at 60 or now $70, but the popular ones are usually $25 to $30 if long as they sold well within 6 months. They don't hold that price forever, especially
for
in
a physical market.
Yeah, for the physical market.
What's a physical game?
So yeah, it's a lot of fun to be able to pick up that new system to you and then go apeshit on the used game rack. And that's when I buy a new system, that's when I oftentimes will buy games that I might not have considered purchasing at any other previous time, because I'm like, I'm saving so much money on this, I'm just going to start picking stuff up so I can have a small library to start with. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. You get 3 or 4 games for the price of one. And then to further that, I have seen customers, I think some of my customers have the most fun when they pick up a system that they've never owned and it's like a generation or two behind. I've had regular customers during this pandemic pick up Xbox 360s because they've never had them. And I mean, games are $3 to $5 a piece. I mean, they're worthless. So, I mean, people are just buying everything and trying everything, and they just keep coming in, and like they'll trade that game back to me, and I'll give them $2 in credit or $2.50 in credit for it, and they'll buy more games.
It's like you're renting them.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. It's at that price, it is. It's like having all of these insanely good rentals at your fingertips. I've never owned an original Xbox, and there are
that's like the one thing I haven't owned either.
And there are games for it that I want to play, and I've almost been putting off buying an original Xbox because, and I was thinking of this when this question came up, I will probably have the same amount of fun. There is some exclusive stuff. It doesn't have to be good stuff, but there's just stuff on there that I've never played and never experienced. Yeah. And, it would probably be fun to take an original Xbox home from work and a stack of games for a couple of weeks and just blow through them.
It's a new frontier.
So, yeah, I think there's a huge benefit to being patient on it. And like we mentioned earlier, hey, this is your hobby. If you've planned for it and you've got the money, it's okay to be current on it. I personally don't see the point right now in going out and buying a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox One. But if you do, good for you. That said, I know that in a year's time, when I finally get a PlayStation 5, I'm going to have a lot of fun taking advantage of all the cheap used stuff that you people have already bought and played through.
What do you mean, you people? When I see this, I think about the type of people that play games. And I go back to, like, if you are the person that was playing all these games brand new when they came out, then you are what Ian and I, not sarcastically, but, affectionately call, you're the gamer. Like, you got to buy these things right when they come out. You have that lifestyle to be able to play all these games when they come out. Like, that's
what you do.
That's what you do. It's not just your hobby. It might be your lifestyle. If that's what you have time, because a lot of these games take like 70 hours to beat these games when they come out, or 50 hours or 40 hours. Like, that's just a lot of time. Not that you can't do anything else, but it makes it tougher to do something else besides that. And a lot of people aren't like that. A lot of people will buy a console, they'll buy a console and they'll buy like that, the heavy hitter here and there, but they don't have time to have like 6-7 games at once going on. So they're going to have to come back later on to some of these games. When I looked at this though, I thought about retro gaming. Is this, you're a patient gamer, you didn't know about this stuff when it came out, because you're talking about eras when, God, we talked this one time about when we thought there was the most different number of systems on the market, probably the mid-90s.
Mid-90s. Like, you got
10 different fucking consoles or systems.
You've
out.
Got the Genesis, the Super Nintendo, the 3DO, the Jaguar, the Sega CD, and CDI. Those add-ons, if you want to call it.
Game
those,
Boy.
CDI, Game Boy, Game Gear. At the tail end of the 90s, you had the Neo Geo
Jaguar.
Pocket. I said Jaguar.
Sega CD, if you want to count it. 32.
Yep.
You had more than 10 platforms. So when you look at that, I don't know if Lynx was still kicking around in the mid-90s. Probably not.
No, I feel like it was probably done by
back then. You wonder why only a couple of companies survived, you know, out of all the, because there's only so much gaming that the marketplace needs, right? There just is. To segment it out that many ways doesn't make any sense. So
we finally learned what the critical number of consoles is that people can actually care
three.
About at any one given time.
It's three, and even that's like, well, two of those are crossing over.
I was going to say three, and that's with one of them being
that's stretching
a different
it.
Market, and then two being very similar.
Yeah. That's all. Then you have the smartphone market, which is different, and PC blends a little bit. But so you have to be not just patient, it's discovery, because there's just too many things to learn about. But even with modern consoles, there's too many things to learn about, because now you have indie games that are, it's a whole thing in and of itself, right? An indie game come out, and if you're a person not... I'm thinking of the person that is not always... Like, me, Ian and I are... Video games, we know about what news is coming and current. You know, you'll yell at me because I don't know enough about modern games. But at least I know what's out there, kind of. A lot of people don't follow everything tooth and nail, even if they buy a console. They may not be always on social media, always know what's coming up. It's got to be fed to them somehow that this stuff is happening. So in that respect, they may not know that like some indie darling comes out and is a hit. They may not know about it. Maybe they discover that 3 years later, 4 years later, someone tells about them. There's just no way of keeping track of all these things. So it's a necessity to be a patient gamer. Even if you think you're playing everything that's coming out brand new, you're going to think things are going to fall through the cracks. There's just too many games. There's more games being made now probably than ever before. With indie games, there's just everyone's making games. Everyone is. Games come out that are great, and then you know no one discovers them on Steam or on you know on the eShop. I mean, that's just the way it is. So discovery is impossible for a lot of these games. Obviously, it's cheaper to wait. Obviously, in general, but yes, there is cons. You're not with the here and now about oh this came out. Everyone's enjoying Animal Crossing. I gotta get in with that community. If you wait a year or two, it'll still be fun. It won't be as fun. You're missing out on these special events or everyone discovering things at the same time. There's less that's new to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my great examples of that for me is Portal. I got to Portal.
Oh.
Yeah. I got to Portal later than everyone else did, and it was great because I got it for like $5 and played through it and loved it. But when I played it, and this was before Portal 2, even came out, so I'm not talking like super recently, but it was well after the game came out. There is a bummer. Like, I get real excited about it. I'm like, whoa, this game is fucking... This does great stuff with narrative. Like, this is a really interesting game. And everyone's like, yes.
Yeah, thanks. We know. Yeah.
We know.
The cake and stuff.
Yeah, you don't get to have that same discovery as everyone else.
Yeah, that's the thing. But I think most people probably don't... If you cared about that much, you would have played it already, though, right? And I hate to say it, a lot of this stuff is, even if you don't play a lot of these modern games, I always say this because the gameplay of a lot of these games is freely available online to see, especially if it's a story-based game.
Sure.
You can go on YouTube and watch it. You can go on Twitch and watch someone play through these games or an archive. So it's a lot different even now versus 10 years ago in terms of play it right away. Or else you'd never get to see it even. You can always experience these things. Like, I'm sure I can go online like and look at the Untitled Goose game and watch someone play it. It won't be the same as me playing it, but I can at least watch someone. Oh, it's fun. Look at that. That's what everyone's talking about there. All right, anything else to add?
No.
Yeah, that was educational.
Just that.
We were patient. All right, let's go to the voice messages first, and we'll see if we'll get to the Q&A here. All right, so anyway, you can leave us, the audience, you guys out there, that hopefully like us, or at least you hate to watch us out there, you leave us voice messages at anchor.fm/thecupodcast. You leave us voice messages, and then we'll play them maybe every week, maybe every other week. We'll see how they slow down, but we got some to play here for you. The first one here is from, Phil Bowser. Not the Bowser.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Phil. Big fan of the podcast. Question for Pat is, what are your like top three or so most challenging NES games that you have actually beaten and completed? And for Ian, a little bit different, what are like three or so of your favorite original Game Boy titles? Thanks a lot, guys.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. Kirby's Pinball Land is absolutely at the top of my list. I love it. I have played that game during blackouts. I've played that game when I was sick. I've played that game traveling. I have played that game fairly consistently since it came out. I almost always have a copy of it. It's cheap, and it's just a really good time. Burger Time Deluxe is, I think, it's the best version of Burger Time, and it's absolutely perfect on the go. The levels are a little bit smaller. They're easier to manage. The AI is not ridiculous, and it looks really good for a Game Boy game. And then third, I'll say Castlevania Adventure 2, Belmont's Revenge. The first Castlevania adventure is trash, and Castlevania Legends is not very good. But Belmont's Adventure is great. The level design is awesome. The graphics are good.
I never played the first one.
Graphics are good. Music is banging in Castlevania Adventure 2. So that's another good one. I could go on about Game Boy all day, but those off the top of my head are definitely some of my favorites.
Most challenging NES games, to me, it's going to come back to Ninja Gaiden. Jesus Christ, Ninja Gaiden. So it has to be ones I actually beat. Ninja Gaiden, probably used an emulator first time I beat it. I'm trying to think if I ever beat it without an emulator. I might have once.
Wait, did he say you had to have beaten them?
I think he said I had to have beaten them. I beat Ninja Gaiden 3. I had to use save states. Otherwise, it's like fucking impossible because of the lack of continues and everything with that. Top Secret episode, I always say that was difficult. That's more about the mazes, but those mazes suck, especially when you're 8 years old, 9 years old. And then another difficult one. I'm going to say Zelda 2 was very challenging.
Zelda 2 is a very hard game, and then
combat.
The end of it is a grind because you want to get as many lives as you can when you're heading into
the temple, whatever.
Heading to that final palace, and it's just I love Zelda 2, but it's not a kind game.
4.5 stars you gave it, according to certain.
Don't get me wrong. I think
it's not a real Zelda game.
I think it's a fantastic game, but it is very, very difficult.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Brendan from over in Massachusetts. I tune in weekly, listen to your podcast, usually while I'm working. My question was for Ian. What's your favorite Ricci Mahjong game? And have you ever played Zhongbu, which is kind of like Ricci meets Arkanoid? And would you ever do an arcade-style Mahjong stream? Cheers, dudes.
I'm typing in this Zhongbu because that sounds very good. So my favorite Ricci Mahjong games... if you want to go like a more professional, like proper like Mahjong game, I really like the Kiwami 2DX on the PlayStation 2. Really good game with great AI, excellent presentation. We're talking about Mahjong here, so it's not like you need the graphical power of a modern system to do it. You can totally have some
ray trace that those tiles.
You can totally have really good games on some of these older consoles. So that's one that I always lean on for like the professional type of game. As far as like the more cartoony or like the cheesecakey strip Mahjong games, I think the best one. I should state Kiwami 2DX is. It's a four-player Mahjong game. I really like the Super Real Mahjong is a series that's on the PC Engine. It's on Japanese PCs. That's more of like a strip Mahjong game, and it's one-on-one, what they sometimes call battle Mahjong. So it fudges the rules a little bit. You're still making the same hands and stuff, but you're only against one opponent. The Super Real Mahjong Perfect Collection on... Neo Geo Pocket Color is really good. One of the reasons I like it is it's one of the few Mahjong games that actually gives you difficulty options. A lot of the early battle Mahjong style games don't give you difficulty options, and because you're competing to see women in various states of undress, they make it really hard to grind through those games.
They make it hard.
Yes.
They make it very
hard.
Oh, yeah.
So it's nice to have difficulty options in that one. It's a pretty decent game to learn on. But yeah, tons of good Mahjong games. Yeah, I would probably stream Mahjong again at some point. I had before. I probably will again in the future. I rarely feel comfortable streaming, so it's got to be the right time.
This is from... Oh, I won't tell you who it's from until the question comes in here.
My man just got back from pre-ordering the new... Intellivision Amico. I got that thing, so... But now, really, I just called and let you know, Pat, I saw that PayPal just did a deal where they're going to start dealing cryptocurrency. So, after your last podcast, your take on crypto, how do you feel about that now? You more optimistic or pessimistic? And how will crypto look in the gaming market? You see anything with that? Gambling or DLC? Love the podcast. Keep it up. G's up. You guys out.
So, the name of this person... Well, excuse me. This is—I think they left another message, but Cryptic Crypto it was the message name on here. So yeah, because I trashed it like a couple weeks ago. Then like next day, PayPal says we're gonna accept Bitcoin. PayPal will accept dirty socks as money. They don't care because they're taking their percentage no matter what it is. So it's like it doesn't matter. You know, they'll accept whatever there. It's not them saying, oh, we think this is going to be stable or take off. It's like, we know that people are going to be trading this form of currency. We're going to take our whatever, 3%. That's what it is.
It's them saying we've gotten to the point where we can ensure that we get our money from this, so that's okay. But
sure.
I would not take that as a necessarily as a sign of
acceptance.
It's not an endorsement.
Yeah, exactly. It's not an endorsement. Like I would take crypto through my web, like my web store has like Amazon payments, PayPal, there's a few others you can sign up for there. I'll take it if I'm guaranteed that rate of return is not going to change the fucking second the payment goes through, because it's so volatile. Bitcoin, like that's something I don't know how they're going to square, because every day it bounces around. So all right, thanks for the question there. Let's see this one here.
How's it going, y'all? This is Nick from Virginia. This question is directed at Ian, but Pat, you can answer too if you are able to. Ian, I know you're a big psychedelic type guy, and I was just kind of curious what games you enjoy tripping to, if you have. I've really had a lot of fun with games like F-Zero and Tetris Effect.
Oh.
Yeah, just curious about what you like to trip to, if you have. Thanks for a great show, y'all. Take care and have a good one. Thanks.
Thanks, Nick.
It's a fun question. So I should state that I have not tripped in many years. I did a lot when I was younger and through into my 20s. It's not that I wouldn't now, but it's something that it's not like getting high or having a couple of beers. You got to set aside the hours for something like that. You know, my rule of thumb, give yourself 5 hours with mushrooms. Give yourself 8 to 12 with LSD.
Hey, mushrooms are legal now in what state passed
that? They're not legal. They're decriminalized.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying.
It's as good as legal.
You can get get the kit and grow them at home and you're fine. But yeah, I mean, there are situations where I certainly would again. But yes, I definitely played lots of games while doing that. My whole thing when I was doing acid a lot was that I never got in shit like some of my friends did, because I didn't feel like need. Everyone always felt like when you're on acid, you got to go out and find an adventure. It's like, no. The point of acid is it brings the adventure to you. It doesn't matter where you're at. You can sit at home and you're gonna have a wacky and good time. So, yeah, a lot of times my friends and I would, you know, go for a walk and then just come back and play games. So I have three very good specific game-related memories. One is I played Bust a Groove, and I got a perfect. I perfected the whole game. I didn't miss a single thing. I played through every character, beat Robo Z, got everything. And that's a rhythm game, so it was a lot of fun. The music was fun. The visuals were good for that. I really enjoyed it. The other is R-Type. The best I've ever been at R-Type was when I was on acid once, and I made it to the 7th level without losing a life and then I lost all my lives on the seventh level. Never one credit completed that game. I'm bad at R-Type as much as I love it.
Everyone's bad at R-Type.
But that was a incredible run, and yeah, you just kind of get yourself in that mode where you're like, no, those bullets are real. If it hits that ship, I'm dead. And you just, you sell yourself on that, and you're like, all right, I cannot hit these bullets. You take it for real. And then the third was, I was tripping with a buddy once, and this was when I was, this was just after high school, but I was still living at home. We were in the basement, and we had like a basement room set up where my brother and I hung out, TV, game systems, stereo, etc. And we were on acid, and we were playing Mario 3. And my dad, who was a school teacher, got up and walked downstairs. It was like 4 in the morning. But he had to get up early for school, and he was working out before going to school those days. And we're like, oh, shit, we're right in the middle of this. And my dad comes downstairs and goes, oh, you guys just up drinking that Jolt Cola playing video games? John's just like, nothing more wholesome than a game of Super Mario 3, Mr. Ferguson. And my dad's just like, all right, I'm going to go work out. It was just, John very much tried to play it cool at that point. We threw him pro wrestling after that, I remember. And like, he'd be like, ooh, good one. Oh, you just got up. I'm like, John, you don't need to like do the whole announcing thing. So yeah, those are three specific memories from that.
All right. Was there anything for me to answer that one or no?
No.
Okay.
My first question is for Ian. Ian, how have you been able to deal with Pat talking in third person for over 10 years and referring to regular math as Pat math? Also, second question, Pat, how have you been able to talk in third person and refer to math as Pat math? Thanks, guys. Love the podcast. Also, Extra Napkins is amazing.
Thank you.
I don't think Pat appreciates that, Joey. Pat doesn't appreciate you, you know, criticizing how Pat speaks about Pat math and how Pat does things like that.
I appreciate it. I honestly, you just blank it out at some point. You know, the first.
I don't think Pat does it that often, to be honest.
You do. You Pat definitely do.
I don't think Pat does it.
I think we can what? Go to the listeners here, and I think they can definitely say yes.
Pat doesn't
you do.
Agree with that at all.
Pat does Pat not agree with that at all. No, honestly, it's one of those things that initially I was like, well, that's a strange thing to do. But then you get used to it. It's like, I don't know.
What?
It's like when you get married and you get used to, you know, your spouse's weird tics.
One thing I've learned to love about Ian is that he doesn't have to understand the machinations of my mind. He just has to roll with it. And eventually he comes along or he doesn't. And it really depends on what it is. But overall, you know, it makes for a more entertaining podcast. But I'm not going to pull the curtain back. But, you know, there's a method to Pat's madness, we'll just say. And Pat math is one of those things. There. All right. Next one.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Clay, although Ian probably knows me from Twitter as Terminally Nerdy.
I do.
Just wanted to say, hello. I really appreciate all the things that you guys have done. I love your podcast, been listening for, God, like 2 years. It is my source of news and entertainment. Thank you for doing this during the quarantine. Love you guys. Keep up the great work. And Ian, I hope you've been enjoying War Sim since you seemed to like my video and it made you buy the game. Peace.
Yeah, thank you for listening. War Sim is great. I've talked about it before on here. I found it through a tweet that Clay did, Terminally Nerdy. War Sim is the all text based kingdom builder game, basically, that just keeps getting updates over and over and over again.
It's getting what?
Update.
Updates, yes. So it's a really good game. It's often on sale. It's worth, I think, the $5 even when it's not on sale. Check out War Sim on Steam. That's not a plug for Clay. Clay didn't make the game, but check out Clay too, Terminally Nerdy. He's a nice guy.
He just gave us a hand job, so check him out. All right.
A handy.
Hey guys, I love your show. I'm calling you from up in Canada. And
Canada.
I just want to say I've been watching a lot your coverage of the new Amico Intellivision thing.
The new, it's not out yet.
And I was just watching a different podcast, no offense, with Victor Lucas and Tommy Tallarico. And a lot of new developments or updates of, you know, the... just the dodging of questions and everything that, that Tommy has about this system is just amazing on this this little broadcast. And I sent you a link, Pat, on your Twitter, so please check that and put it on your next see you podcast. All right. Thanks, guys.
If I had to try to keep track of all the Tommy Tallarico podcasts that he's done, I would be dead by now, since he's done probably literally hundreds at this point. And I've been making that, like, he's done probably a couple hundred podcast appearances. So that's all I'm going to say. I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah.
That is that someone running a company with a multi-million-dollar investment think it's worth his time and effort to go out and talk to every YouTuber that'll book him for an interview. All right. This is from Jedediah.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Jedediah calling with a quick question and a comment. My question is, what is your favorite Japanese Kit Kat bar variant? And if it's not my favorite flavor, what's it like to be so wrong? My comment for you is about how I went online to the Square Enix website and bought a brand new sealed PS1 game and got it graded by WADA. I ended up selling it for a handsome little profit, and I think that's an interesting little thing, something that's readily available. Was being able to be bought and purchased by these people that don't know what they're looking at. It reminds me of the Spider-Man games you were commenting on, but it's even more so destructive than that to our hobby because they're collecting something completely different. They're coveting the plastic, like you said. I don't want people to be going out and flipping these or trying to scalp them, but I think it's something that should be known.
Oh, hey, sure, Jedi. I mean, it's, oh, sorry. We brought that up before. What was the first thing you said? Oh, the only Japanese Kit Kat flavor I know, because someone gave them to me one time in a cool little tin. I was actually Karen, I believe, writing on the books. She gave me the green tea Kit Kats, which are delicious.
The green tea ones are really good.
It's the only thing I've ever had, though.
I had a...
I'm starving.
That's the thing. There's lots of different varieties of Kit Kats.
Why are we asked out in the U.S. with these?
But I rarely see them. Whenever I go to, like, Mitsuha or a place like that would carry them, they're usually sold out. However, I did have a... I can't remember what it was. It was, like, a strawberry cream one that was a Valentine's Day one year that was really good. And I really want to try, and I don't know... It might be too late. They did apple pie Kit Kats this year, and those were actually released in the U.S., and I think that has the potential to be very tasty. As far as the WADA thing, yeah, it's weird. A lot of, you know, and it's just a lot of people don't know about, first, the Square thing. I think we even talked about that before.
We brought that up that they were selling stuff.
You can still buy some of the... So when Square merged with Square Enix, there's a run of the like PlayStation Final Fantasy games, for instance, that you could get direct from Square Enix that have the new Square Enix logo on them. They're different from other PlayStation games because they're actually silver on the bottom. And I remember the first time I saw them thinking they were bootleg because I'm like, why are they not?
Sure.
Why are they not the black bottom discs? So, yeah, I mean... There's a lot of people out there who they get swept up in this sort of collecting and marketing thing, and they don't realize that they either blinded by, like you said, the plastic on the outside of it, or they don't realize that they can do this themselves for just for a fraction of the cost.
Sure,
you can literally do what he just did.
They're uneducated. They're buying things on WADA that are still available on eBay, even sealed sometimes, and for a fraction of the cost. They're uneducated. They're assuming it's another type of market when it's not. Like, oh, it's on Heritage. It must be rare. It's sealed. No. They don't know. All right.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Joey Freeze here.
Joey Freeze.
I used to listen to you guys on the weekends after my work week, and I used to start my work days listening to Jim Cornette's podcast, which, as you can imagine, is just him yelling and screaming about how bad modern wrestling is. And I said, you know what? That's probably not the best idea. Not that you guys are Bob Ross or anything, but compared to him, you are. I work at Steinway Pianos in Queens.
Oh,
and,
nice.
It's a bit more mellow. So thanks for that. And stay frosty.
Thanks, Joey. Joey Freeze has done he's done music for AVGN. He's done piano music, obviously.
I've talked to him a little bit online. I met him at one of the conventions. Nice guy.
Working at a piano shop is probably like the most chill job ever, because who's going to come in looking to buy a piano? Just like the nicest piano. I want a player piano. I want a mini grand. I think my grandfather, his player piano was a Steinway, I believe. Anyway, what was he saying about?
I was just talking about how he switched Jim Cornette.
Jim Cornette is raucous. He's obviously very knowledgeable. He's been in the business for like 35 years since he was, you know, small. He's also somewhat insane. And he's a hypocrite. His big thing is that modern. He said he hates modern wrestling. He hates the Young Bucks. He hates Kenny Omega. He hates how the business has "quote unquote" been exposed. When the business has been exposed since the early '90s, it's been exposed since the Vince McMahon trials and people come out. And,
yeah, this is not a new thing.
Ever since they were legally forced to change it to being sports entertainment, because otherwise they couldn't get commissioned in certain states to have their events at WWF at the time. And he talks about how these people aren't taking it seriously. They're treating it like it's a video game and things like that. I'm like, you think it was treated seriously in the mid '90s in WWF when you had the Goon and you had a guy who was a plumber and you had Duke the Dumpster Drosy?
Yeah,
and you had a fucking one of the most famous wrestlers is a fucking undead wizard,
Isaac Yankum, DDS.
You know, you have the Undertaker, who's like a magical creature. Like what? Like, did you ignore these things? Like, wrestling was always over the top and, you know, parody of characters, and it was never like totally it's like sports. For that, you only have to go back to even, I'd say, Japan. But even Japan, they always had over the top characters that were based upon, you know, their superhero characters and things like that. So even there, like Tiger Mask stuff. So even there, it was never totally like, oh, right, we're treating this like a serious sport. That's like, that almost never existed.
No, that is definitely a person who is getting old looking back on the glory days with very, very selective lenses.
And in this day and age,
nothing that drives me crazier than that.
I'm not saying there's not a market for treating pro wrestling as a serious sport. In Japan, they mostly still do that. That doesn't mean, though, that would translate to an audience in 2020, this day and age.
Sure.
With social media and everything, everyone knows that it's entertainment. So I don't know how far you'd go. They tried it with the NWA thing, bring it back. They did like the studio thing setting, which is interesting, like how they did like in the 80s, you know. Mm-hmm. Sure. So I'm not saying it, but for a large audience, you can't get away with that anymore. You can't. You just can't. You just can't get away. Wrestling audiences are either children or like 40 plus at this point. Like, that's because the people that liked it when they were kids. Like, it's different now. Like, it's totally different than how it used to be, where it's like, you know, you had the old women like wanting to stab people with screwdrivers in the 80s, like try to stab Harley Race, you know, things like that. I don't think we're ever going to see that again, where like there'll be almost near riots breaking out because they think it's actually real, and how dare you hit that guy with a chair.
Right.
I don't think we're going to, and probably for the better, we're not going to see that anymore.
No, definitely right? For the better.
Like that's, yeah, people are foaming at the mouth, but you want people to think it's actually real? Like, you actually want that again? You really don't want that.
No,
I don't think you really want that anymore. Time for one more. We'll do one last here.
Hey, y'all. I just got to say, I love this show. It's always like a highlight of my week listening in to the new episode. And also, Pat, your luscious mane is currently the inspiration for how I'm growing my hair out.
Oh.
Now, I remember a few weeks ago, Ian offhandedly mentioning Ian Ferguson Smash Bros. So I'm curious, what would be your core roster be for both Ian Ferguson Smash Bros. And Pat Country Smash Bros.?
I always feel like that should be its own topic. I feel like we should save that for its own topic.
I feel like we should save that because thank you for the question. I have answers for that. But I feel like that is a good poll topic.
We're going to say, I'm sorry, CJ. That's a great, we will get to that. I'm going to highlight that. Wait, what would our personal Smash Brothers rosters be?
Yeah.
That could be entertaining. Because now, you know, we talked about maybe Ian's as being Namco characters, but that could be entertaining. So, but thanks so much for the questions and comments about my hair and complaining about Pat Math. It's been great. remember, go to anchor.fm/thecupodcast if you want to hear us ramble. Or you can subscribe on YouTube as well. There's a link somewhere for that if you want to get some early segments. Or our Patreon is patreon.com/cupodcast there.
All right.
You done eating? We're going to keep this other one still, or you want to do it?
I'm done.
You're done?
I'm done.
An hour 42?
Hour 42.
That's fine. This was fun.
Yeah.
We've only been doing five main topics the past few weeks. We're getting old. It's been seven plus years.
Wow.
7 years. 7 years. What are you gonna do the rest of the day?
I'm gonna fucking go home and sleep.
I'm feeling better, and you're afraid of me being sniffly. I'm okay now.
No coughing. You're fine.
I haven't been coughing. That's why, you know, I say that. I'm not kidding. I've sneezed every day this year. And I'm not sure it's because I've now developed allergies or the environment or my body's just slowly dying. I don't know, but I've sneezed every day this year. I know that because I never used to sneeze every day. I sneeze like once a week. And now it's like, yeah, oh, I sneezed yesterday. I sneezed again today. And that's how I've been tracking it. I've literally been tracking. Like, oh, I've sneezed again.
Sneeze diary?
Well, think about it. How often do you actually sneeze? Like, you never
used to sneeze every day.
Oh, I never used to
sneeze. I always sneeze.
I've never sneezed every day.
Sneeze all the time.
Never. Never sneeze every day. Sneeze all the time. Well, that's your system working the stuff out. Working out the gunk.
Yeah.
In there. The filter system.
The filter system.
The natural filter system. That is Ian Ferguson's nostrils and things like that.
Okay.
You can get that weed whacker, though, if you want to trim those there. That's all. You get that weed whacker.
Maybe I'll go to the dispensary today.
That sounds like
a okay. All right. Goodbye. We're done, everyone. We'll see you in a week. I might have a nice announcement for you all next week about an event. We'll see. Take care.